Hi, everybody. So nice to be back here. The Rambam talks about in Hilchos Megillah that at the time of when Mashiach comes, a lot of the Chagim might not continue the way that we're familiar with them. They might not continue at all. But we're told, the Rambam says, that Purim lo yibatel me'olam. That Purim will be the holiday that just continues lasting, is everlasting, will never be nullified in any sense of it. The way that we know Purim is going to continue forever. So the question is why? What is it about Purim that's so compelling, that's so everlasting? So I want to take a little journey with you this morning, now for the next, I don't know, 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and talk about and try to understand what is it about Purim that the themes of Purim are so fundamental to the Jewish people. And really, as I titled this year, the fulfillment of Jewish destiny. And to begin, we really have to start from the beginning of the Jewish people. So follow along with me. We'll see at the end how Purim really embodies those ideas. And we're going to start with the beginnings of the Jewish people with the emergence of Avram Avinu. Hashem tells Avraham, Lech lecha me'artzcha u'moletzcha u'beit avicha, ela aretz asher eka. He tells him, pick up and go, and leave everything you're familiar with, and go to a place that I'm going to show you. He tells him that he's going to be a blessing, ve'eselecha l'goy gadol v'avarchecha, v'agadla shmecha v'heye bracha. I'm going to make you into a great nation, I'm going to bless you, I'm going to make your name great, you're going to be a blessing, V'avacha mevarachcha, and those who bless you, I will bless. U'mekalalecha aor, and those who curse you, I will curse. V'nivrachu b'cha kol mishpachot adamah, and you'll be a source of blessing to the world. The world will be blessed through you. So the Mefarshim points out, I think I've said this in previous Yom Midrash Yom Rishon Shir, it's very interesting that you have this you have the word bracha mentioned 5 times in 2 psukim. Anytime you have a repetition of a word in a small amount of time, or in 1 or 2 psukim, there's always something major going on there about that theme. Here you have the word bracha 5 times. So one of the mefarshim that Kedas Yitzchak points out, I don't have the parish here, but points out that the 5 times bracha is corresponding to the 5 times that the word or is mentioned on the first day of creation. In 3 psukim, you have the word or mentioned 5 times. Vayomer Elokim yihi or, vayihi or, vayar Elokim et ha'or, etc. And the reason is, he says, is because Avraham is now the second, really the renewal of the world. It's the second sort of recreation of the world. And the first world was created with a physical or, with a physical light. And now the second world, that first world didn't last. And the second world is now going to be created with a spiritual light. Now, obviously, there was a spiritual light in the first world, but it wasn't spread throughout the world. Avraham now is going to be a source of bracha because he's taking that light of God that Hashem created the world with on the first day of creation, and now Avraham's going to spread that light throughout the world, that spiritual light. So he's really creating this new world, and through that light, he's going to be a source of blessing to the world. So the question is how? How is he a source of blessing? Rashi points out in source number 2 about how the heyei bracha, he says, ha-brachot netunot biyadcha, ad achshav hayu biyadi. Up until now, Hashem says, I was the source of bracha to the world. Everything, all bracha in the world came from me. Now, you're going to be a source of bracha because you're going to embody that spiritual light that I have brought into the world, you're now going to spread it throughout the world. So the question is how? How does he spread that throughout the world? So what I want to suggest is that there are 4 characteristics that are very prominent in Avraham that allow or enable him to be the one to spread this throughout the world. The bracha of Hashem, the spiritual light. The first one is sacrifice. Mesiras nefesh. Sacrifice. If we see the very first thing Avraham is doing, Lech Lecha, as the Mefarshim say, it's his Avraham's tests began with Lech Lecha and ended with Lech Lecha. The first one, he says, pick up and leave everything you're familiar with. That was a test. Go blindly. He doesn't give him a nice description of the land, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, like he does you know, Hashem does for the Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. It was just go cold to this place I'm going to show you. And he picks up and goes. And of course, the final test, which was the most difficult, was the most Mesiris Nefesh, the most sacrifice on Abraham's part. And that was the Akedah. And if you see, Perek Chafet in the Akedah, source number 3, Hashem vayhi achar hadverim ha'ela velokim nisa et Avraham. Avraham is tested by Hashem, tests Avraham, and he says to Avraham, vayomer kachna et bincha et yachitcha asher ahavta et Yitzchak. Take your son, your loving, the son you love, and your only son, the son you love, take him and go v'ha'eleu sham le'ola alachad ha'arim asher amar lecha. And bring him as a sacrifice to me on the mountain that I'm going to show you. Talk about sacrifice. And what are we told in the next pasuk? Vayashkem Avraham baboker, vayachavosh et chamoro. He gets up early, he saddles his donkey, vayikach et shtei ne'arav ito, and he takes two of his servants with him, ve'et Yitzchak bino, and he goes to this mountain, asher amar lo Elokim. They travel for 3 days. There's a lot going on here, by the way, that I'm different shiur, maybe next year. Akedah is very complicated, very, very powerful story, but I'm skipping that for now. So what happens? Vayom ha-shlishi vayisa Avraham et einav, vayar et ha-makom merachok. He walks for 3 days. Interesting, there's no dialogue here in 3 days. There's a lot going on beneath the surface. He goes and he sees the place from a distance, and what does he say? Vayomer Avram el na'arav, shuvu lachem ko imachamor, va'ani va'anar nocha ad ko. He says to his servants, you two wait here with the donkey. I'm going to go. It's just going to be Yitzchak and me now the rest of the way. I'm going to go with Yitzchak the rest of the way. So what happens? He goes and he's about to sacrifice his son. Again, the ultimate sacrifice that's so incomprehensible. You know, all the Mefarshim say, this is a model for us, but like, don't try it at home. You know, this is not necessarily something, this is something that we can't even fathom. You know, the amount of love that Avram showed Hashem. And of course, Hashem stops him before that happens. If you look at that Abarbanel, we'll come back to that source in a minute, but the Abarbanel, in source number 4, it talks about the words vayachavosh et chamoro. Why do we need to know he saddled his donkey? This is such a dramatic moment in Tanakh. We need to know he saddled his donkey. So a lot of Mefarshim talk about zrizus lemitzvah. He's doing it himself. He has a lot of servants that can do this for him. But he wants to do it. He wants to do it himself. Very nice. That Barbanel says, as is everything in Hebrew, in Judaism, there's always more than one way of looking at something. Vayachavosh et chamoro. On one hand, chamor is a donkey. What does chomer mean? What does chamoro, another hand? Sorry? Essence or physical, really. Like a chomer. The chomer is the substance of something, right? The physical. So what he says is, Abarbanel, lefisha ya'avram bazeh kovesh et yitzro. That on one level, he's saddling his donkey. But on another level, he is overcoming his physical. He's overcoming his yetzer, his nature. This is not natural. To take a child and to sacrifice this child to God willingly, right? People who do that, it's not their choice most of the time, ever. Except Avraham. And says that Barbanel, he was only able to do this because he was kovesh et yitzro. He was able to rise above, to overcome his physical and his personal physical connection to this child that he was so connected to, and he was able to overcome that. And that's why, by the way, when it says, when he says to his servants, you stay here with the chamor, I always wondered, what's the deal with that? Even if you want to say, vayachavosh et chamoro, because he was very, you know, eager to do what Hashem wanted him to do, why do we need the details of him telling his servants? It's one thing if you want to say he and Yitzchak went together privately, so the servants stay here. But what if you stay with the donkey? Who cares about the stupid donkey at that point? Are you thinking about the donkey? It's the most dramatic moment probably in Tanakh, right? Who cares about the donkey? But again, you stay here with the donkey on one level, and on another level, you stay here with my chomer, with my yetzer. I can't do this unless I leave my natural instincts and my physicality aside, because otherwise I can't do this. And that's why he leaves that, and all he does, he walks with Yitzchak without that chomer that makes him up, that is physically who he is. Because he's only able to do this by pushing aside his physicality. That's Mesiris Nefesh. That's sacrifice. Interestingly, as a side point, We're told that there are a few people, Moshe, because I'm going to be, you know, Moshe is going to be one of our people in this model of sacrifice and Jewish destiny, which we'll see. But he also, there's this chamor that comes up in various times in Tanakh. And so it comes up, you know, Moshe rides al hachamor, and also Mashiach is going to come al hachamor. And it's interesting, the Mefarshim talk about how it's the same chamor. What does that mean? It's a very old donkey. Like, so obviously there's much deeper meaning to what that means, and I think that that's the idea, taking the idea of the barbanel, al hachamor is, you know, people who are able to do something al hachamor, beyond, above and beyond the physical, what you're physically, naturally, you know, instinctively, you know, wanting to do. And that's why when Mashiach comes, at a time when he's going to, Mashiach will bring spirituality into the world, and at a time that the spiritual will trump the, you know, physical in the world, that Mashiach is going to come al hachamor. It's going to be above, the spiritual will be above the physical, which is not the way the world is nowadays. So that's what Avram is able to do. And what happens as a result? Back to Perek Chaf Bet, in source number 3. After this happens, Vayomer Hashem al tishlach yadcha el hanar ve'al ta'as bo milma. He's about to sacrifice his son for Hashem. Hashem says, "Don't do this. Don't touch him. Ki ata yadati ki yarei Elokim ata. I know now that you are a yarei Elokim." Again, in our Akedas Yitzchak shir one day, we'll talk about exactly what that means. But my point is here is that this is the second characteristic. The first characteristic that Avram is embodying is the characteristic of Mesiras Nefesh, sacrifice. The second one is Yirat Elokim. There's a Yirat Elokim that you've shown, a fear of God, which only comes from a place of recognition of God, of wanting to do Ritzon Hashem, the will of God. And that comes, there's a submissiveness. You have to be able, there's a humility that comes along with that, that you have to be able to submit yourself to know that there's a higher authority and there's a higher being that I am submitting myself to. And that's what Yirat Elohim means, that I'm able to have this fear of God, this recognition that there's a greater mission to this world, rather than just my physical existence. So we have Mesiras Nefesh, we have sacrifice, we have Yirat Elokim, we have Yirat Shamayim, recognition of Hashem and submission to Hashem. The next point, the third, what I want to suggest, the third fundamental characteristic of Avraham, who is beginning the Jewish legacy, is, I'll call it Tzedek U'Mishpat, doing the right thing. Being Yashar, the Netziv very, very beautifully talks about how Sefer Breishit is called Sefer HaYashar. I talked about this once also in one of my shiurim. And it's doing the right thing, being straight, doing the right thing, caring about people, caring for people's well-beings. We see that very much in Avraham. If you see, we see it in many places. Before we even get to the most famous place, which is the story with Sodom and Avram arguing with Hashem and Sodom, I brought here source number 5 for you. It's very interesting. Stuck here, I think this is so important. In the middle of Perek Yud Dalet and Breishit, now you have to understand, Perek Yud Gimel, Perek Yud Bet, Avram picks up and goes, Lech Lecha, he leaves his home and he goes to Eretz Canaan. Perek Tet Vav is Bris Ben Habsarim, which is probably one of the most important prakim in Tanakh, where Hashem is promising him the unconditional existence, you know, eternal existence of the Jewish people. And right before that, there's a whole perek that's dedicated to a war between 4 and 5 kings. I don't know if anybody ever remembers learning that. I feel like every teacher skips that one. Kedar LaOmer is one of those kings. That's about all you know from that story. There's 4 kings going to war with 5 kings. The 4 kings actually attacked the 5 kings and overcame the 5 kings, and one of those kings was overcome was Sodom. So what happens is everybody in Sodom was captured, and including Lot, Abraham's nephew. And we see here in Perek Yud Gimel, Vayavo ha-palit vayaged la-Avram ha-Ivri. This palit, this refugee from the war, somebody escaped the war, and he comes to Avraham ha-Ivri. And he comes to tell Avraham Ivri what happened. Vayaged, he tells him the story about this, you know, these people that were taken captive. Now, it's very strange. This whole pasuk is very strange. First of all, why do we even care about this? And not only that, but Avram here is, it's the only time, Avram, the first and only time, he's called Avram HaIvri, Avram the Jew, right? You would think he's called Avram HaIvri when he picks up and goes to Eretz Canaan, or when he is about to sacrifice his son, or whatever, you know, why in this story? It seems like such a seemingly insignificant story. He's called Avram HaIvri, and then the second part of the pasuk doesn't even seem to be connected to the first part. Okay, we're being told where he lives, which is, again, kind of irrelevant if this person's just looking for him. Okay, maybe geographically, we need to know where he's going. And we're told that he's living, Achi Eshko v'Achi Aner, v'heim balei brit Avraham. And he's sitting in peace with his neighbors, right? He made a pact with his neighbors. He's sitting peacefully with his neighbors. So why do we need to know that information? If you look at Rashi, there's a famous Rashi on that pasuk. I quoted the Medrash Rabbah because Rashi actually quotes exactly verbatim the Medrash Rabbah. Ve'yaged la'Avram ha'Ivri, he says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, kol ha'olam kulo me'iver echad, ve'hu me'iver echad. Why is he called Avram ha'Ivri? Because the whole world is on one side, and he came from the other side of the river. That's what it seems like the Medrash is saying, which is what Rashi quotes. He came from the other side of the Tigris and Euphrates River. Right, so he came to this side, people are on this side, and he came over Me'ever Lanahar. If you look at the Mefarshei Rashi, I don't have those sources here with you, if you look at the Mefarshei on Rashi, they say that's not true. I shouldn't say it's not true. There's more than that. It doesn't just mean he came from the other side of the river. Why is that important here? What it means is that everyone's on one side of the world, and he's on the other side. What does that mean? Ideologically. Ideologically, he's different. He's different than everybody else. Why? Because he cares. Because he gives a darn. And that's why, you know, really anybody else, he's living at peace with his neighbors. He doesn't have to get involved. There's something that's happening between four kings and five kings. It has no shaykhus to him. Yes, it's true. Lot was his nephew and he was part of it. But it's very clear that he doesn't get involved only because of Lot. So most people, you're living at peace with your neighbors. What do you need to get involved somewhere far away? You know, your life is good here. What do you need? What do you care what's going on somewhere many miles away that doesn't impact you? But Avraham is different, because Avraham cares. Because Avraham is a champion of justice. There has to be tzedek u'mishpat, there needs to be justice. And if something is unjust, then this was unjust. So he has to get involved. And it's interesting because the refugee knows exactly who to look for. Right? Who does he go looking for? Avram HaIvri. And that's why he's called Avram HaIvri there, because he's different. He's looking for someone who's going to care, who's going to get involved, and that's why he's looking for Avraham. And then, of course, you know, the bigger story, which is the more famous story, in source number 7, when Hashem is about to destroy Sodom, and Hashem says, Vayomer, Vashem Amar, this is a fascinating pasuk, Perek Yurchet, it's the beginning, middle of Perek Yurchet. Well, actually, let me give you a little background to Perek Yurchet in Vayera. It's a very famous perek. Well, I guess every story in Bereshit has a famous story, famous perek. It starts with the three malachim visiting Abraham, right? Remember? Avram is still recuperating from his bris, and the three malachim come, and one of them is healing Avraham, one of them is going to go and destroy Sodom, and the other one, which is the, you know, highlight of that story, is going to tell Sarah and Avram they're going to have a baby, right? The last part of that parak is, that's the first part, the second part of the parak is about Avram arguing with Hashem about Sodom. And then there's three psukim in the middle. And those three psukim, I believe, are the bridge between the first half of the parak and the second half of the parak. And these are these three psukim. We have pasuk Yud Zayin. We have one of these rare opportunities to glimpse into God's thoughts. It's almost like, you know, I teach English literature also. You know, it's like a character on stage giving over a soliloquy. You know, what's the point of a soliloquy? None of the other characters can hear what he's saying, but it's for the audience, right? He's talking out loud. He's talking out loud, so the audience knows what's going on in the person's mind, right? So what's going on? Hashem is saying, should I tell Avram what I'm going to do to Sodom? Now, obviously, it's a rhetorical question. He's about to. But he wants us to know why he is going to tell Avram about Sodom, right? It doesn't affect Avram. Again, yes, Lot is there. But you know what? He can destroy Sodom and save Lot without even telling Avram beforehand. You know, why does he need to tell Avraham what's going to happen in Sodom? And Hashem tells us. He tells us why. He says, again, Hashem amar hamechase ani me'Avram asher ani oseh. Should I withhold from Avram what I'm about to do? Obviously, no. Ve'Avram hayo yiyeh legoy gadol v'atzum v'nivrachu v'kogoyeh haaretz. Avram is going to be the father. I'm making him into the father of a great nation, and he is going to be a source of blessing to the world. Ki yida'ativ. I know him. I know him. Rashi says, it's lashon chiva. I know him. What does I know him mean? I know he's going to give me a hard time with this. And I want him to. And more importantly, I want you, my readers, my learners of Torah, the descendants of Abraham, to know that he's going to give me a hard time. And that's what Hashem says, because I know him. Leman asher yitzaved banav et beito acharav v'shamru derech Hashem la'asot tzedaka u'mishpat. Because I know that A, he's going to argue with me, because he wants justice, even from me. And you look at the harshness of the way Avram argues with Hashem. And more than that, even further, I know that he's going to pass this down to his children, to follow the path of God, to do tzedakah u'mishpat, la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat, leman havi Hashem al Avram et asher diber alav. And that's why I'm bringing upon him all the brachos that I'm bringing upon him, because he's that guy. He's the guy who's going to make sure he's bringing the spiritual light of God into the world. He's a source of blessing because he cares. He cares about doing the right thing, because he cares about people's welfares. That yes, even though there's a group of people here who are literally diametrically opposed to everything Avraham stands for, he is going to argue on their behalf. Because maybe, because they were created, B'Tzelem Elohim, in the image of God, and maybe they can change. And maybe there's hope for them, because he cares. And that's what's so fascinating here, is that Hashem is telling us, I mean, there's lots of beautiful mefarshim on this topic. I brought you Rashi, but the Barbanel comments also that Hashem is basically telling us, be proud of where you come from. This is your father, and this is what you have to emulate. And this is why, the Barbanel in number 9, he says, this is why Hashem didn't tell Noah, obviously Hashem told Noah he's destroying the world. But Hashem doesn't say to us, should I tell Noah what I'm about to do before he destroys the world? Because he's telling Noah for functional reasons. Noah lives there. He has to build a teva and be the continuation of the world, basically. But this is why Noah had a physical mission in the world, to continue the world physically, and Abraham's mission was a spiritual one, to bring God into the world. And this is what Hashem is telling us when he says, this is why I'm telling Avraham what I'm about to do. Because he's going to not only care about what happens and argue with me, but also teach this to his children. And this is where you come from. So there you have it. So Avraham, in a nutshell, not so much of a nutshell, we have the sacrifice, we have the Mesiras Nefesh, we have the Yirat Shamayim, the Yirat Elokim, right? The fear of God, the submission, the recognition of Hashem. You have the tzedek u'mishpat. You have the caring. You have the wanting to be a champion of justice in the world. 3 of the 4 categories of fulfilling Jewish destiny. And the 4th, which I mentioned in the context just now of the tzedek u'mishpat, is transmission. That it's not just enough to be a champion of justice. It's not just enough to give a darn, to care. But we transmit it to our children. Ki yidativ leman asher yitzavetz banav. Right? Betzedek u'mishpat. It's the passing down, taking all of this, all these character traits, and passing it down to your children. And teaching children that this is the model. This is what we're supposed to do. And yes, that's why if there's a tsunami in Japan many miles away, Israel's the first ones to go and help. Because this is who we are. This is who we are. And this was, and Avram was our model in this. And it's not just for one person in a vacuum, but a transmission. This is what he's transmitting down to his descendants. And that is why Avram was chosen for this purpose. The 4th is the transmission, the passing it down. Meaning all these things, the sacrifice, the Yirat Elohim, the Tzedek U'Mishpat, if it ends with Avraham, what good is that? So it's not just that he embodies this, you understand? But that he's passing it down. Thank you for asking. And Hashem points that out. It's very important. It's a very important step. And Hashem points it out when he says, Leman asher yitzavetz banav. Right? He doesn't just say, I'm going to tell Avram about Sodom because I know Kiyadativ, I know him, I know he's going to argue with me. It's more than that. He's going to pass it down to his children. And that's why he's being chosen for this. And in fact, if you look at Rashi, in number 8, I did number 9 already, but I only did the beginning of Rashi, Laman Kiyadativ, I said Lashon Chiba. Right, Hashem says it very lovingly. But he says, Lama Yadativ in the second line. What do you mean? Why does Hashem know him? Why do they have, obviously, again, knowing is a very strong connection. It's like with a smile, kibiyachol. I know him. We're very connected. Why? Leman asher yitzaveh, lefi shehu mitzaveh etzbanav, lishmol darki. Because he's going to pass this down. It's not going to end with him. This is his legacy to his children, to his descendants. Okay, I'm going to skip number 10. There's a few more sources, extra sources there. I always want to, you know, do more than I need in case I get to it, but I usually don't get to it. But I'm going to skip 10 and 11. 11 is what I made reference to, the Nitziv's introduction to Sefer Breishi, which is a beautiful introduction where he calls it Sefer HaYashar. I just wanted to show you in 10 and 11 how Tzedek U'Mishpat and Yashrus is synonymous. Like someone who is a champion of justice is Yashar. You do the right thing. You're a champion of justice, and you do the right thing. You're not crooked. And I just thought that was interesting because one contrast that the Netziv makes, he says the reason that Sefer Breishit is called Sefer HaYashar is because it's a book about people who are Yesharim that we can learn from. And he goes through Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and specific situations how we can learn from their Yashras. And he refers to, you know, he makes a reference to Bilam, who he contrasts with Avraham. And he says Bilam was the opposite of Yashar. At the end of Bilam, Bilam was the Navi who Balak, King Balak, hired, I'm going off track a little bit, but just, you know, one more minute, he hired to curse Bnei Israel. He was a Navi for hire who had certain kochot, that's a shir in and of itself also, what those kochot are and why, but, you know, later on in Bamidbar. But So when he realizes he can't curse them, you know, his plan fails, and he ends up saying, Matovu Ohalacha Yaakov, but at the end of that plan, he has this outburst, almost this, like, moment of epiphany, not almost, a moment of epiphany where he says, Tamut Nafshi Mot Yesharim, like, I wish that I could be, my end can be like the end of those Yesharim, and those people who are Yashar, like, he's recognizing that he's not Yashar. And he's talking, Rashi says he's talking about Avraham. You know, people like Avraham, like, I'm not like that. And why is he not like that? Because Avraham has kochot, and Bilam has kochot. And Bilam recognizes that Avraham uses the kochot to bring, you know, good to people, and for the betterment of people, and Bilam uses his kochot to curse people. Anyway, so I wanted to throw that out also, because in source number 12, the Pirkei Avos, there's a famous line in Pirkei Avos, that, you know, kol mi sheyesh biyado shlosha dvarim halalu mitalmidav shel Avraham Avinu u'shlosha dvarim acharim mitalmidav shel Bilam HaRasha. Right? There are three traits that, you know, that make us, that represents Avraham, that, you know, if you follow, then you're like Avraham's talmidim, and three that you would be Bilam's. Ayin tova, ruach nemucha, v'nefesh shvela, mitalmidav shel Avraham. Ayin tova, you look at people positively. Ayin tova, you see, you want good for people. If you see people positively, and of course, ruach nemucha, a lowly spirit, humility. So all of these, those are the talmidim of Avraham, as opposed to Bilam, who's ayin ra'ah and ruach gvoha, you know, more arrogance and looking at people negatively and trying to find the dirt on people and trying to bring people down. And we are, you know, hopefully the descendants of Avraham, and we talmidav shel Avraham. And again, I think that includes the Yiras Elohim, the Tzedek U'Mishpat, that we've incorporated as the characteristics of Jewish destiny. Okay, we have to get to Purim over here. So we'll do Moshe very briefly. We'll do Moshe very briefly. My next example of this, of a person who fits all four categories that we just categorized for Avraham, is Moshe. And that's much quicker here, but also very clear. We see, you know, the first Jewish leader of the Jewish people, because there was no Jewish people, Avraham was an individual, there wasn't yet a Jewish people, it was all promises. So we see in Moshe. So first of all, Moshe, if you see in source number 13, Back to these categories. The champion of justice, tzedek u'mishpat, is the first thing we see that's so profound, in so prominent in Moshe's character. Right? Vayehi bayamim ha'hem, vayigdal Moshe, vayetze el achav, vayar besiblotam. He sees the Jews suffering. He leaves the confines of the palace, which, by the way, fills the category of sacrifice. It's real mesiras nefesh. He leaves the palace. He could have just been continued living a very comfortable life in the palace of Paro. And he leaves to go, you know, check out what's going on outside. There are people suffering, and he has to get involved. And what does he do? And he goes and he sees Vayar Ish Mitzri Makeh Ish Ivri Me'achav, and he sees an Egyptian beating up a Jew, another very famous story. Vayifen Ko Vacho Vayar Ki Ein Ish. He looks both ways, he sees no one's there. Vayachat HaMitzri Beit Mino Bachol. And he saves the Jewish man by the hands of the Egyptian. So what does that mean, Vayar Ki Ein Ish? He sees nobody's looking. So there's a lot of Mepharshim discuss what that means. And if you look at the Ktav HaKabbalah, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, most people say something along these lines. Did he see nobody? Was there no one there? First of all, there was someone there. So someone was there. So what was he looking for? He was looking to make sure he did it secretly, but he didn't do it secretly. And if someone was looking, he wouldn't have done it. So the Ktav HaKabbalah says, Ra'a She'ein Beinehem Gever Begovrim, Ve'ein Mehem Sam Lev Al Tzarat Achiv, Lishtadel Al Hatzalato. There was no person who cared. No one cared. He looked around, everyone's out there in the field working, this guy's being beaten up, beaten to death, and everyone's going about their work. No one cares, no one's getting involved. And therefore, b'makom she'en ish, hishtadel liot ish, where there's a place where there's nobody, no one's standing up for what's right, Moshe's the one to stand up for what's right. That's tzedek u'mishpat. That's, you know, that's standing up for tzedek, that's standing up for what he believes in. And of course, by the way, that's not the first time he stands up, because he also gets involved. That is the first time. And then he gets involved the next day when he sees two Jews fighting. And then he gets involved when he sees, you know, the Roim, the shepherds, giving the daughters of Yitro a hard time. So when there's injustice, he gets up, he fights for the injustice. Again, sacrifice on Moshe's count, on Moshe's, you know, characteristic of Moshe. We see the sacrifice again by him even leaving, by Yetze Elachav, the word by Yetze, he goes out of the comfort of his palace, of his upbringing, and he goes to check out what's going on out there. I think one of the greatest sacrifices, though, that Moshe makes is later in source number 15. In source number 15, where this is right by Chet HaEgel, right? At Har Sinai, at Mamad Har Sinai, when Hashem, tells Moshe, look what's going on, you know, he's about to go down the mountain, and Bnei Israel are worshiping the golden calf, the Egel HaZahav, and Hashem basically says, I've had it with Bnei Israel, ki am k'shei orefu, they're stubborn, ve'ata, and pasuk yod, hanichali, vayichar api mehem, bahem, ve'achlam, ve'aseh otcha l'goy gadol. Hashem says, this pasuk is amazing, another shir. Ve'ata hanichali, let go of me. Let go of me. The Medrash says he was like holding on to, what does that even mean? Like, it's nothing physical. But it was almost like Hashem couldn't do it until Moshe let him do it. Moshe was like holding Hashem by the neck almost, says the Medrash. And that's why he says, Hanicha lemi, let me go, and I'm gonna destroy them. But you, Moshe, I'll make you into a greater nation. You'll be a greater leader than you were before. And what does Moshe do? And Moshe says, it's not gonna happen. He says, if they go down, I go down with them. He says, Lama Hashem yichara apcha be'amecha asher hotzeita me'eretz Mitzrayim v'koch gadol. Why are you going to do this? You took them out of Egypt to do this? To destroy them now? Ve'ata im tisach chatatam in pasuk lamibet v'im ayin mecheni na misifrecha asher katafta. And if you're going to do this, then erase me from your book. That's mesiras nefesh. That's putting himself on the line and saying, this is not about me. This is not about me. This is about them. I don't want to be greater. You know, I don't want another nation. I'm with them, and if they go down, I'm going down with them. Having, again, the opportunity to save himself and even become greater from this experience, and he doesn't want to do that. So there you have the Mesiras Nefesh. Of course, the second, you know, the Mesiras Nefesh, the sacrifice, which was our first category. The Yirat Hashem, recognition of God, I don't even have to bring you sources for that one. I mean, this is somebody who spoke to God, panim el panim, who brought the Torah to, you know, who went up on Har Sinai, you know, there's recognition of Hashem there. Ish Elokim, he's called at the end of his life before he dies. There's recognition of Hashem, certainly submission to God. Third category, Tzedek u'Mishpat, which we see very, very clearly, Tzedek u'Mishpat, and transmission. Transmission, I don't have to also bring psukim for that. Eilu mishpatim asher tasim aleihem. I have one line. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. Moshe is all about transmission. The only reason we have Torah today is because it was transmitted through Moshe Rabbeinu. So there we have Moshe fulfilling these categories also. These three categories, these four categories as well. Again, sacrifice, mesiras nefesh, yirat elokim, recognition and consequence and subsequent submission to God, recognition of God and submission. Tzedek u'mishpat, justice, and yashrus, and then and caring, and then transmission, passing all of this down. And by the way, the same way that Moshe, that Avram had the people who contrasted him, you know, he met a lot of individuals, whether it's a Bilam, or even when, you know, when Avimelech, Melech Gror, took Sarah, as, you know, and he said that she was her sister. It was the second time. The first time was in Mitzrayim and the second time was in Gur. And then he says to Avram, why did you do this? Why didn't you say she was your wife? Because then he was punished by Hashem. Avram says, Ki ein yirat Elokim b'makom hazeh. You don't care. You don't, there's no recognition of God. You'll play by your rules. You won't care. Nobody here cares if she's my wife. If she's my wife, they'll kill me and take her. So that's why I said she's my sister. If there's no submission to a higher authority, there's no yirat Elokim. That's a contrast to Avraham. With Moshe, we have a contrast which is also not just Bilam, because Bilam is also contrasted to Moshe, but also Amalek, which brings us to our last, you know, that's who Moshe fought, the lack of Yirat Elokim, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So now I want to add Mordechai and Esther to this list. Really, just using the Pshat of the Megillah. Because if you set it up this way with these four characteristics, which really, I believe, fulfill Jewish destiny, Mordechai and Esther and the Megillah, Megillas Esther, really fits so perfectly into those categories. If you look at source number 17, talk about sacrifice. Vayomer Mordechai la'shivel Esther, al tedami b'nafshech lihimaleit beit hamelech mikol hayudim. You're not going to be saved, or don't try to save yourself, basically. What does he say? Sacrifice. Ki im hacharesh tacharishi ba'et hazot, revach v'hatzala yavo mimakom acher, ve'at u'beit avich tovedu. We're in source number 17 now. The pshat from the Megillah, Perek Dalet in the Megillah, which really, Perek Dalet is really the turning point. I saw Rabbi Sintner, I think, had some of the sources over there. It's really the turning point in the Megillah. Before this, Esther here, she becomes very actively involved in the story, taking ownership of, you know, taking accountability for her destiny. But step number one in taking, you know, fulfilling your destiny is sacrifice. There is sacrifice here. And there's tremendous sacrifice. And he says, you know, this, you might die in the process. It's true. She's scared. She's going to go to Ahasuerus. She wasn't invited. What happens there? But that's the sacrifice here. Putting yourself on the line. Even though you could have been saved, but putting yourself on the line to help other people. And that's why when Esther says in Tet Zayin, and she tells Mordechai, Lech knos et kol ha-yehudim ha-nimtzaim b'shushan v'tzumu alai, what does she say at the end? V'kasher avadati, avadati. Which means what? If I die, I die. At the beginning, she started saying, I can't go, Ahasuerus didn't invite me. And then she realized, there's sacrifice here. If I want to step in line and fulfill my destiny as a Jewish woman, there's sacrifice involved. And if I die, kasher avadati, avadati. If I die, I die. I have to try. That's what the sacrifice is. And not only that, but you see the real recognition of God here also. When Mordechai says to her, he says, when he says, ki im hacharesh tacharisha ba'et hazot, if you are quiet now, revach v'hatzala yavo mimakom acher. Salvation will come elsewhere, from a different place. Ve'atu beit avich tovedu, and you might die in the process. And who knows, says Mordechai, if this is the reason you became queen. Now again, I always kind of chuckle at that line, because we're all sitting there knowing the whole Megillah, all 10 Prakim of the Megillah, and we're like, duh. What do you mean, who knows if this is why you're queen? Of course this is why you're queen. The story of Purim happened over many years. This is seeing Yad Hashem, where it wasn't so obvious. Obvious to us, because we have hindsight. right? We have the insight of hindsight. And we also have the Megillah all in front of us in 10 nice short prakim. It happens over a long period of time, okay? Like Yad Hashem sometimes is very often in this world and we don't necessarily see it. But Mordechai recognizes this. And finally, Esther does also. That's Yirat Elohim. That's recognition of Hashem, that there's Hashgach on the world. That maybe there is a reason. There's a reason that you became queen, which is to do what you're supposed to do now. The Tzedek U'Mishpat we see very clearly because of Mordechai, who he is. Look at source number 18. Ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBira. From the very beginning, when we're introduced to Mordechai, we're introduced to him as an Ish Yehudi. What do you mean, Ish Yehudi? Why is he called a Yehudi? We just discussed why Avram's called an Ivri. He's a Yehudi because he does a Yehuda-like thing. What's a Yehuda-like thing to do? What does a Yehudi does? Stands up. What does he do? Tzedek u'mishpat, exactly, good. Okay, we're on board here. So that's exactly what Yehuda, the first person to do this, the original Yehudi, well no, really Avram was the first one to do this, but Yehuda, do you remember Yehuda steps forward in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, Vayigash Yehuda, right? By the way, the Vayigash is the same language as Avram also when he fights on behalf of Sodom, the same Vayigash, he's coming forward. Okay? Vayigash Yehuda. Yehuda puts himself on the line for Binyamin and for his father, for Yaakov. Right? Yehuda wasn't in trouble with Yosef, Binyamin was. But he steps forward when Yosef says, I'm going to take Binyamin and imprison him. He steps forward and he says, take me instead. Please, you're going to kill our father. Let Binyamin go home, take me. That's sacrifice. That's tzedek u'mishpat. That's fighting for what's right. He made a promise to his father. That's being a Yehudi. And that's what he does. He gets involved. He gets involved to defend mishpat. And by the way, here, Mordechai, now we're talking about Mordechai, Yehuda did also. But Mordechai also, by the way, Mordechai could have saved himself. He was chashuv enough, and he was related to Esther. All Esther needed to do was go tell, you know, Ahasuerus, by the way, you know, I have a cousin who's been a real father to me. You know, when you destroy, I know you agreed to let Haman destroy the Jewish people, can you save Mordechai? He would have been saved. He didn't have to save everybody and put their lives on the line to save everybody, put everything on the line. And not only that, but I'll take it two steps forward. More. He also saves Ahasuerus, right? Underratedly. It's a small part in the Megillah. But he also saves Ahasuerus. Mordechai saves Ahasuerus from Bigthan and Zeresh, right? It's Mishpat. There's something wrong. There's something going on. And he gets involved. And furthermore, you know, you see the Tzedek u'Mishpat, certainly, and also, you know, we define Tzedek u'Mishpat also as caring, as a yashrus, you know, caring about people. If you look at the continuation in Chaf Zayin, we see that you have this repetition, I'm trying to see where this pasuk is, where it comes up in pasuk. Source number in Perek Chaf Zayin, and also this source in source number 21, where you have the idea of Doresh Tov Le'amo V'Dover. It's the end of Lamed here. Ve'ishlach Svarim Et Kol Yudim El Sheva Ve'Asim Me'Yam Medina Machut Achashverosh Divrei Shalom Ve'Emet. Right? And Doresh Tov Le'amo, that you see that there's a theme here that he's sending out messages of peace. He wants to bring people together, Mordechai. By the end of the Megillah, he's connecting people. He's connecting people in the Megillah. And that's why he's gathering people together and Geret HaPurim Halal, I'm looking for this specific pasuk. I don't think this was included. My mistake. It wasn't included. But he's Umeiv Medinat Machut Achashverosh Divresh Shalom Ve'emet Doresh Tov Le'amo. Right? That he's looking to connect people. And in fact, the mitzvot of Purim are exactly that. If you think of the mitzvot of Purim, it's all connected. We're looking to bring people in, to care about people, to show that we care about people, whether we're giving mishloach manot ish l'reihu, it's bringing people together. Whether we are giving matanos l'avyonin, caring about people. That's one of the main mitzvot of Purim, to give tzedakah to people who need. Okay, and also the Su'uda, to have people coming together for a Su'uda. So this was the characteristic of Mordechai and Esther. And then finally, our last category, transmission. The transmission is very clear. And again, if you see in Pasuk Chaf Zayin, again, in the continuation of source number 21, and in source number 21, we have Kimu v'kiblu ha'yudim aleihem v'al zoram. There is so much repetition. You know, sometimes by the time you get to Perek Tet, you know, you're tired, the Megillah is almost over, you have so much to do still, and it keeps going on and on and on about how if this was, you know, the story's over already, so like we want to go home already. But the, a very big, important part of the story is the continuation of it, and how it gets passed. Pasuk Chavchet, v'hayamim ha'ilan niskarim v'nasim b'chol dor v'dor, mishpacha u'mishpacha, medina u'medina, ve'ir ve'ir, and look at the key words, b'mei ha'purim ha'ilan lo yavru mitoch ha'yudim, and these will never be forgotten, v'zichram lo yasuf mizaram. Purim will never cease among the Jews and their descendants, and its remembrance should never perish from our descendants. Zichram lo yasuf mizaram. Their memory will never be perished, will never be gone, will never be erased. And this is the transmission. All of this, and look at the last pasuk, Lamed Bet, umamar ester kiyem divrei ha'purim ha'ila v'nichtav v'sefer. It will never stop being passed down. It was written in a book, and the transmission of those character traits that fulfilled the Jewish destiny that we've seen continue on. Last piece, last 5 minutes. What I want to suggest, so again, that's nice. It's a nice idea, I think, that the idea that, you know, Mordechai and Esther fulfill, just continue fulfilling what Abraham established, what Moshe continued, the sacrifice, the Mesiras Nefesh, the Yirat Elohim, knowledge of God, Tzedek u'Mishpat, caring, reaching out, connecting, doing the right thing, and transmission. For the last 5 minutes, I want to show you, and I think this is a very powerful idea, how Amalek is the antithesis of that. So clearly the antithesis of that. On every level, every one of our categories. If you look, first of all, at the next source here, source number 22. This is in Dvarim. We just read this. It was the Maftir on Shabbos, right? Parsha Zachor. Where is that found? Where is that section found? The end of Parsha Kitetze. So it's fascinating. Right before the mitzvah to remember what Amalek did to us, look at the source. We have a little section, a few psukim, about warning us about being just, about tzedek u'mishpat. Lo yelacha bekischa even ve'even gedola u'ktana. Lo yelacha bebeitacha ifa ve'ifa. Even shlema v'tzedek yelacha. What this means is you must have perfect and honest weight and a perfect and honest measure. Don't cheat in business, right? Don't be a cheater. Be yashar. This is the warning. Be yashar, be, and the words are tzedek u'mishpat. Look at this. Tzedek, leman yarichle macha'al ha'adama. Tzedek, you have to have tzedek. And why? Ki to'avat Hashem Elokecha, pasuk tetzayin, kol asa ila, kol asa avel. All who are corrupt, it's a to'eva. It's disgusting in the eyes of Hashem. It's the antithesis of what we believe in, what's our destiny as Jews. And right after this warning, we're told, Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek, b'derech v'tetcha mimitzrayim. I don't think this is a coincidence. Well, what the Torah is telling us is that Amalek is the antithesis of everything we stand for, of all those categories that we stand for. And if you look at it, let's look at it carefully. What did they do? We just read this yesterday in Shul. Asher karcha b'derech, they came upon us on the path, on the way. And what does Rashi say? Asher karcha lashon mikra. Right? Coincidence. That they believed, there's no hashkacha, there's no hashkacha in the world, asher karcha b'derech, they just happenstance. Lashon mikra, it just happened. We don't believe in lashon mikra, right? We believe there's everything for a reason. That's recognition of Hashem. So there's no recognition of Hashem. Asher karcha b'derech, v'yizanev v'chakor nechashalim. We're going to come back to that in a second. Acharecha, v'ata ayef v'yageya, v'lo yarei Elokim. Black and white it says. They attacked us from behind. From behind, which, by the way, some of the parts point out, not from the front, because they were afraid of people, just not God. They were trying to pick on the weaklings. They attacked us from behind, the people who were tired, who were sloughing in the back, so they can attack from behind. They were taking advantage of weak people, which, again, is the opposite of tzedek u'mishpat, of standing up for the guy who needs. It's taking advantage and exploiting the guy that's easily taken advantage of. That's what Amalek stood for. Asher karcha baderech, and not only that, but if you continue with Rashi in the next source, not only, Rashi gives a few explanations what karcha means. So the first one is lashon mikra, happenstance, which is also the opposite of recognition of God. But he says, Rashi, the last answer in Rashi is amazing. He says, karcha baderech, he says, lashon kar, like he made b'nei Yisrael, lashon kar v'chom, like hot and cold, Right? This is actually a famous answer in Rashi. What does that mean? And he says, for example, Shayu kol ha'umot yira'im lihilachem ba'ubaze v'hitzchil v'her'am makom la'achirim. Everyone was afraid of Bnei Israel, right? They were afraid to touch them with a 10-foot pole because they just decimated the Egyptian empire, right? Annihilated the Egyptian empire. So nobody wanted to touch them. So Rashi says it was almost like mashallah ambatya rotachat. It's like a boiling bath, a boiling pool of water that nobody wants to put their finger in or touch because it's so boiling. We don't want to touch Bnei Israel. We're going to let them go. We're going to leave them alone. But what happens? But as soon as one person jumps in or one person goes into that hot bath, right, it cools it off for everybody else. And that's what Amalek did. Rashi says, even though they were gonna die, and they were sacrificing themselves for what? So that they could be attacked by other people. That's the opposite of sacrificing for the betterment of somebody. They jumped in knowing that they were gonna be destroyed in the process, but at least then they'll make Bnei Israel vulnerable. It's that boiling hot, you know, pool that first person gets burnt, but then everyone else can jump in after that. That's the opposite, because that's mesiras nefesh at its worst. That's sacrificing yourself, not for the betterment of people, to destroy people. That's the opposite of sacrifice. So we have the opposite of sacrifice, and then of course our second category, which is Yarei Elohim, not only mikra, happenstance, but that lo yarei Elohim, we're told in black and white, they didn't have yiras shamayim. The opposite of what our characteristics as Jewish people are. Opposite of mesiras nefesh, opposite of yiras Elohim, opposite of tzedek u'mishpat, because they attacked the poor people in the back who were easily exploited. And therefore, and here's the clincher, and therefore, it's the opposite of transmission. There is transmission, but what are we transmitting? What are we transmitting? That they're going to be erased from memory. That what's transmitting is not going to be everlasting. The one thing that's everlasting is that they're going to be forgotten. I know it's sort of like a, you know, oxymoron a little. But the point is, look at the words. Look at the words. Vayomer Hashem, in the last source, on Moshe, Ketov zot zichron v'sefer v'sim be'oznei Yoshua, ki macho emche et zecha melech mitachar ha'shamayim. And not only, oh, actually, I should go back to the earlier one. And he says, and write this in the book, you know, write this down, the sefer, and put into the ears of Yoshua, pass it down, that what? The memory of Amalek will be wiped out. And that's why, mitachad hashamayim. And the last pasuk, vayomer, ki yad al kaska, melchama lahashem ba'amalek, mi dor dor. That same dor dor, generation to generation. What's being transmitted is what? Ki yad al kaska. Hashem is swearing. He's, you know, Rashi says he's, it's almost like he's putting his hand on his throne. And the reason that kisei doesn't have the aleph, it's kas, because as long as Amalek exists, God's kisei throne is a little lessened. You know? So Hashem promises for generations to wipe out Amalek's memory, midor dor. So there you have it. The antithesis of mesiras nefesh, of sacrifice, the antithesis of yirat Elohim, the antithesis of tzedek u'mishpat, and the antithesis of transmission. That's it. If you have any questions, you can come and ask me after. And I hope everybody has a meaningful Purim, and this is why we understand that Purim lo yivatel me'olam. It's really just the continuation in how we fulfill our destiny as Jewish people. Have a wonderful Purim. Chag Purim Sameach.